Well, hello, guys. Welcome to the show. I'm glad you could join us today. In this episode, I have Mark and Terry Stamen, and they are going to share with us just a story that is going to blow your mind. And it really blew my mind. I just can't believe things like this are happening in our country, in our world right now, but they are the parents of seven beautiful children who have been unlawfully taken away from them by the state of Kentucky. And we're going to talk all about that right now. Guys, thank you so much for joining me today.
I also thank you for having us.
Absolutely. So like I said, this is just so hard for me and a lot of people to wrap their brains around, because it's just hard to believe that things like this can happen. So let me backtrack a little bit here. I'm going to read a little bit of your story for our viewers. Mark, you're a retired 20-year U.S. Air Force veteran. You're from Cincinnati. Terry, you're from Kentucky. You've been a stay-at-home mom of your seven children, homeschooling them. I mean, married for 25 years. You have the average normal American life, and one thing happened in your life and turned everything on a dime. So let's kind of talk about what happened. What happened to you?
Yeah, thank you. I'm going to share the narrative because Terry likes it when I do that. And we were just a normal, run-of-the-mill American family, just going about our business. I was gainfully employed. This happened in 2016. So we've been in this nightmare situation now for 7 years. And, at the time, we didn't really know a lot of what we're going to talk about here today as far as what was going on in the country. And so this was kind of a shock to us to see how things unfolded after what happened. And what happened was we had all seven of our children kidnapped under the color of law. And by our investigation, we discovered it was by a conspiracy involving people within and outside of government, private citizens, as well as people within the medical community who are part of child trafficking ring operating in Louisville, Kentucky. And we speak all of this on evidence, and we have a significant amount of it. But what happened was we had our 17-year-old daughter, Amy. She was 17 years old at the time, and we were preparing her for some new things in her life, and we wanted to get her an eye test and make sure that she was going to be good to go in respect to driving. We wanted to get her that driver's license and open up those doors to her. And this was kind of driven because Terry was out with Amy one day, and when they were driving, there was communication as to whether or not Amy could see something. And so we took it upon, our concern as parents that we wanted to make sure she was healthy and everything was fine. So we went to a practitioner that we'd never seen before. And what happened was they did a well check, and then they began these probing questions into Amy's eating habits and things like that. And so very uncomfortable, wanted to draw blood from Amy. Amy didn't want to have that done. Terry didn't want to, go along with that to put Amy in a difficult situation. And so they declined. And then within about 30 days after that visit, we started receiving an inquiry as if from CPS. And, prior to the inquiry by Child Protective Services, CPS in Kentucky, we began, there was a time when we started getting these phone calls after that initial doctor's visit, within about a week or so, saying that we needed to bring Amy back into the office immediately because she was concerned she may have additional issues, that she might be anorexic. And, we were very uncomfortable with that because that was not really expressed to us, like at the first visit, like I'm diagnosing Amy with anorexia or anything like that, because none of those forensic things were done to begin with. And then when we began receiving these phone calls and just knowing, having sit down dinners with our families about every night that we could, we knew Amy ate and she was fine. And, like normal adolescents, Elsa, children go through big growth spurts in their adolescent years. And so Amy was going through that, and being tall and thin like us, she was just developing normally. And, about a month later, we began receiving these phone calls as if from CPS. and saying that, you know, it was a matter that we needed to call them back on. And this happened when I was at work. And so when I started getting, you know, notification that I had an emergency at home, I need to go home. I went home. Terry was telling me what was going on. And I said, hold on a second. I said, you know, we're going to wait and see if we can verify what was going on. And so basically what happened was the allegation was that through the course of the investigation, what transpired from there is that we had set up a second medical practitioner and second appointment for a second opinion. And that happened on March 28th. And so as things unfolded, we got this document from the girlfriend of Terry's father. And when we went to their visit that we had, you know, about every week, and that happened on March 25th. When we walked in, we received this document from the girlfriend of Terry's father, who works in the healthcare industry, and she and who has a brother on the Louisville Metro Police Department, a twin brother. She handed us this document as if from CPS, and it just said that we need to call CPS in respect to a matter concerning Amy, but it didn't say what it was. And, you know, having been in the military, as you said, you know, I worked with a lot of official documents. My first look at the document was it looked highly suspect, borderline. It looked forged, like a forgery. And so I was like, well, I don't know what this is. And then the second day we got another form delivered to our house. And so comparing the two documents, they were kind of similar with some similar anomalies, but they didn't have government officials identified correctly, and which seemed really strange. And then it looked just as suspicious as the first one. And so after we had that second practitioner do an evaluation on Amy just for her own peace of mind, the nurse practitioner said that she was in good health and under no restrictions. Her height and weight were different than the first practitioner, and put her in a very good zone. And we, you know, they even were so kind where they gave us a document saying that. And so what happened after that was we felt really good about that. So I went to go see the CPS supervisor because I wanted to see if this inquiry was legitimate. And he's like, oh, yeah, we hand these out, you know, and this was like in real time, right after the medical practitioner appointment. And he said, we've received the diagnosis that your daughter Amy is severely anorexic and now immediate treatment. She's going to die soon. He wanted me to submit to an interview. And I said, first of all, I don't know where you're getting your diagnosis. I said, but no, I'm not going to submit to an interview. And I had the good health document from the second practitioner, and he wanted to take it from me. I wouldn't let him have it. But I said, you can call them and ask them. And so I wanted to get whatever it was he was reading from. He was just reading off of his computer, and he wouldn't give it to me. And so I left, and, you know, I wouldn't submit to the interview. And so, you know, there's a lot to our story, but I'm going to kind of fast forward a little bit. But on April the 6th, I went to the court on the recommendation of some counsel that we were able to acquire. And, you know, we had a big police scene on March 30th, where we had a bunch of Louisville Metro police officers come to our house. And they came up to the door, and they said, I answered it. And they said, Mark, I need you to open the door. You lost custody of all seven of your children. And so they just wanted me to open the door, and they had no paperwork. They had no documentation. They would never explain or say why they were there. They just wanted me to open the door and just hand them our seven children. Well, of course, they having no warrant, no court order. They said they had a verbal order, which is not lawful according to court process. They're not allowed to remove a child pursuant to a child welfare action on a verbal order. So after 2 hours of that, they left. Now, supposedly our daughter is in imminent danger of dying based on what the CPS supervisor said. But they did not, you know, stay there. They didn't come back. So a whole other week goes by. I go to the court on April the 6th. With Amy, and Amy, you know, stands up and says, I don't want to go to the hospital because they were pushing to put her in the hospital. We presented the good health document. And I'm thinking, worst case scenario, the judge will say, have a third party assessment, right? And then come back and we'll determine what to do from there. So, no, that didn't happen. What happened was they ordered Amy to be taken to the hospital immediately, which was not done by the girlfriend of Terry's father and her aunt who were in the courtroom on that day. Instead of going to the hospital immediately, they went back to our house and began moving Amy's things out of our house down to the girlfriend of Terry's father's house. So it was a kidnapping in progress. And then after they did that, they began to move against me. And so we need to detain Mark so that we can get the other six kids. So they called Terry at our house And the judge says, I'm ordering you to release all six of the other six children. And Terry said, no one's going to take my kids away from me, and hung up on the judge. And then they put me in jail without charging me with a crime. They held me in jail for about 22 hours, give or take an hour or so. And, you know, I received conflicting things when I was in there, saying that I was going to be, you know, I was there until my next court hearing. And then, no, I needed to post $35,000 bail. It was like it was different things going on. And so I guess eventually they came and took the other six children. And then later that night, unbeknownst to me, until I got out of jail the next day, they did take Amy to the hospital, and she was basically in prison there for 10 days. And after she was released, they did not diagnose her with anorexia. So instead of returning all seven of our children, they began to probe further into our life. And then when they discovered that we were homeschooling family, and that we did not tell our children what grade they were in, well, we never told them what grade they were in, because they went year round. Their learning was a cultural year-long thing, that and they were well advanced, and they were saying that, oh, we didn't register with the state, even though we did have proof that we registered with the state. And so basically what happened was, they have been holding our children hostage. Three of them have aged out, and they wanted us to comply with a case plan, which is what's happening to many families like us across the country in all 50 states. We refused on our constitutional right not to be subject to involuntary servitude, which is a 13th Amendment right, without being convicted of a crime. Because like I said before, we have not been charged or convicted of a crime. And this is what makes this entire thing a fraudulent operation, and what's happening with us. And so in addition to standing on the protections of our constitutional rights, having taken that oath as a veteran, and I'm still going to uphold that oath, we refused to comply. And then as we were going along in the course of our investigation, what we discovered was similar images across CPS, family court, even police documents, near exact images that we tied to correspondence that the girlfriend of Terry's father and from documents that we had written and given to us in 2013, and then a party invitation going back to 2005. So we scanned all of the documents, went through every letter A through Z, and we uncovered more than 50 felonies and misdemeanors that we reported to every state and federal law enforcement agency available to us, all the way up to the highest levels of the Department of Justice. And we have received no remedy and no justice. And four of our children, we have not heard or seen since they were taken. And after our last visitation, which was around June of 2016, and during the visitation, also, they wanted us to be subject to having like oversight with CPS. And we were very uncomfortable with that. Felt like our Fourth Amendment was being violated and monitoring our children. And we were wondering, with all the evidence that we were uncovering, where that was going to go. And so we didn't want to give them any place to use to fabricate anything else against us. And then in the course of our investigation, we discovered fabricated medical records. So basically just an overall big conspiracy to kidnap our kids. And so we reported this, and nothing has been done on our behalf. We even met with U.S. attorneys in West Virginia for an hour and a half, and we showed him our evidence along with a HHS investigator. And they were convinced enough to send it back to Kentucky, who ended up ignoring us and didn't do anything. And so having exhausted all the avenues available to us, we entered the public arena a couple years or so ago. And we're out here not just to tell our story, but also on behalf of many other of our fellow Americans who are having this happen to them. And it's a real threat, because this is all being driven by the Adoption and Safe Families Act of 1997, which was enacted by the Clintons and members of the 105th Congress. And what it did was it incentivized the CPS and family court system with large amounts of our Title IV Social Security money. And so for every child that they take, these agencies and state governments are getting huge amounts of money, and even foster care providers. And this is why we have these signs and commercials that we hear on the radio and signs in our community asking people to be foster parents, because they're incentivized to take more kids every year. And so the threat for all of our fellow Americans is that no child is safe in the United States right now. They will fabricate and make things up on allegations and go after your families. And then they will attempt to hide it in closed courts with no juries, no public oversight. And they just want basically people to submit to these forced services that they don't really use to facilitate reunification. What they do is they will use these things as a means to justify the eventual adopting out of the child to other people so that they can get another bonus under the Title IV funding through the ASFA. And so that's a little bit about what happened to us and then the big picture of what's happening across the country. And I'd like, if you have a question, I'm going to turn it back over to you. And then Terry will also like to maybe share some things about, we have a couple organizations and then the impact also on what's happening to our children.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, boy, Mark and Terry, I'm just sitting here with my mind completely blown. My heart aches for you. 2016, let me just do a very brief recap here. 2016, essentially out of the blue, you're told we're taking your kids. You can't do anything about it. We're taking all of your kids, which, and even that, you know, if they had issue, like this is just my logic. They had a concern about your eldest. She's your eldest daughter. Yes. They had a concern with her, but they're going to take all of the children. And there's no signs of abuse. There's no, I mean, there is nothing because, you know, there's going to be people and I'm sure you've been, you know, asked and people have said things to you or about you. Oh, there must be something that they're not telling. I'm sure people say and do that. But I mean, you know, you've been pretty much an open book on your whole story, your whole process. And it is so shocking to me that this can happen. And but you're living proof. And you said four of your children. You have not been able to see or speak to them since 2016. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. And, you know, three of them who have aged out, our two oldest daughters, we're having a really hard time. One of them won't even speak to us. And then the older one, Amy, we're just having a hard time really connecting back with her. And however, we do have just a little bit of bad, good news in respect. I mean, we have been able to reconnect with our second, which is Noah. And, you know, the amount of damage that's being done to our children and other children across the country is just significant. And even like in respect to the younger four, we know that they're being lied to and that they're being failed, lying narratives about, you know, what mommy and daddy, and they don't really know. That's why doing these things and what you're doing, not just in respect to our story, but and letting other people know that this is going on. And there's so many other families that are being affected this way. So many families are being terrorized and as in some cases, even gagged. To where, you know, they're afraid to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And
now they were, I'm sorry to interrupt you. They were put into the foster system, or were they put into like a group home setting? Like they were taken from you and essentially put into the system. But what exactly does that mean? Were they just installed in foster homes and, or with the, you said there was an aunt, there was your father's girlfriend.
Yeah, Terry's father's girlfriend.
Terry's father's girlfriend. So did she was the one that took the kids in? And I apologize for not following.
No, that's okay. All the evidence points to her being the mastermind of this child trafficking ring that we uncovered there. And what's significant about it is that the family court system in Louisville, Kentucky began as a pilot project in 1991. And then it branched out across the state and then was actually benchmarked, or they're a self-acclaimed national model. So we think that what we've uncovered there is happening like a script across the country. And so, yes, we were threatened with them being placed in foster care, but her father is really not in a condition to really adequately oversee the children. And initially, they were supposed to be placed with him and his girlfriend. But then we found out they were eventually split with one of Terry's half aunts. And so, you know, it's been very destructive to the sibling, you know, to the unity among the siblings and then to our family overall. And so in our situation, being that Terry's father is not married to this woman who is behind this, that we wanted as part of our investigation to know whether they were still, they were being regarded as a relative placement where there's really not as much money that flows out, or still designated as like a foster care placement where the big amounts of Title IV money. And what we're talking about here is in some families who are placing these kind of arrangements, on each child, they can get up to $2,000 a month. So if you take a child or a group of them at a very young age and you can get $2,000 a month, like in our case, that it just it, for that 1 year, it was probably, it could have been up to $14,000. And then if they put them on psychotropic drugs or other things, it just fuels additional Title IV Social Security money that we, the people of the United States, are funding. We are funding child trafficking, child theft, and money laundering in the United States under this safety and best interest disguise. And so, you know, there's a lot of things that are going on here. Terry's been talking a lot about and highlighting the social engineering also going on. And, you know, the amount of crimes that are occurring, they attempt to immunize themselves. Mm-hmm. And I can talk a little bit about that because it's really significant. But I want to just give Terry a minute to talk a little bit about the social engineering and the effect on children.
Yeah, absolutely. Terry, please do. And I want to also ask you, if you don't mind, just kind of piggybacking on it. First, I want to say to you and say to you both, but, you know, as a mom, I can't help but relate to you. And no offense to you, Mark, as a dad, I don't want to minimize your heart in all of this. But as a mom, it is, I sit here and I think about how you must feel and how this must have all affected you. And what you both have done in the face of, and are doing in the face of such incredible trauma, to turn around and help others, and to make change in a whole system is such a commendable and amazing thing to do. So I want to commend you both for turning something that is horrific, flat out horrific, as a parent, and trying to make things better, not only for yourselves, but for other people going through this as well. So, you know, huge debt of gratitude to you, I'm sure, from so many people. So tell me about exactly what you just said, what Mark just said, the effect on the children collectively with something like this. And please also talk about the organization that you guys created.
Yeah, so it's very traumatic for the children, obviously, to be ripped from their families. Thankfully, in our case, there was some, familiarization with our children. But a lot of these children, you know, when they're ripped and they're just placed with strangers, and from the research that we've been able to do over the course of the 7 years, the foster care system, this system in general, is just very dangerous for children. And it's out there openly being reported in the mainstream news, the danger that foster children are being placed in. Children are being adopted and fostered. They're ended up dying or sexually abused. And we're not anti-adoption or anti-foster parents. But what we've seen is that a lot of families that are affected by this system is that instead of letting, if there is a legitimate reason for the child to be removed from their parents because the parents have been charged with a crime and they're incarcerated or, you know, something to that effect, that there are family members that are willing to take in the children and they're not being given the children. We have actually started our own show for our organization called Let Our Children Go. And we're interviewing a relative tonight who it was the family was actually had a lawsuit down in Florida for that very issue of the child being given to someone else to adopt when there were plenty of family members that want the child, even if they weren't going to be given back to the parent. So this is just, it's a real big issue that it just seems like it stays hidden. And part of that, I think, is because of they keep the courts closed for the most part, it seems, and they use the reasoning that because there's children involved, that for the privacy of the children, you know, so they hide behind that, and that's very effective, I think, for the information not getting out to people. And then the people that are affected by it, which is hundreds of thousands, at any given time, there are hundreds of thousands of children in the foster care system. So this is happening to so many people. And I think a lot of times people don't want to speak out because of the shame that is involved with saying that, you know, the government has taken your children. And so there's just different mechanisms that they've been able to get in place to keep this hidden. But so one of the things that we hope to do with our organization, Let Our Children Go, is, and people can find that at letourchildrengo.org, is to help to educate and raise awareness to the problem so that more people can become aware. And I was thinking earlier that, I mean, you know, we didn't know 7 years ago that we were going to have a state making a law saying that basically they're going to hide children from their parents if they feel like the child is threatened by the parent knowing where they are because they want to transition themselves to another gender, which is what just happened in the state of Washington. Just a little while ago, they actually put a law in place to where they're able to hide children from their parents. And there was a headline that came out in the Associated Press a few days ago, basically saying that trans minors will be protected from their parents. So this is what we have going on. And this is, as this thing is allowed to continue to spread and escalate, it's just a real danger for people. And so when we were thrust into this, we started finding out that there were a lot of other families that this was happening to. And so in the course of our journey of connecting with other parents and advocates, Let Our Children Go was born out of that. And so we're just trying to continue to grow that and to offer support to other families and their advocates that are affected by this system. And, you know, we want to rescue our own family, and we don't want to see this happening to our grandchildren or great-grandchildren in the future. And so we just recognized it for the threat that it is. And it helps us to be able to cope with what's happening to us and our family by being able to help other families and work towards a solution to stopping it. And so I did want to touch on the trauma that the children go through. And it's sort of a, I think it's sort of like a Stockholm syndrome or brainwashing thing.
Just going to say brainwashing, yeah.
Sort of go through. And so we have a three-part mission statement, and our part of our mission statement is to help with the restoration for the families when they do get their children back and dealing with that trauma and reconnecting, even if it's when the children, if they aren't able to reconnect until they're adults, there's a lot of things that have to be worked through there. And so that's part of our mission, to help the families and then to offer support to the advocates too, because there are people out there that are wanting to help. And there is such a thing as like secondhand trauma, you know? So the advocates, they need support, and because we're very appreciative of the people who are out there and trying to help that haven't actually had this happen to them or their family, but they see the danger that it's putting children in. So what we want to do is protect the children, and to protect the children, we need to protect the parents. the parents' rights need to be protected so that they can protect their children. Because just like what happened with us, we went into that courtroom and the judge was like, we're taking educational and medical decision-making away from you. So then that opens up our children to basically them doing whatever they want to with. And it's just a really big problem because even parents who have children that have been taken and they might have concerns that their child is being abused in the foster home. And it's just a really, really bad problem. And so
absolutely,
we're out here hoping to raise awareness and to bring people on board to join with us.
For anyone watching, hearing your story, you have not been charged with any crimes. You have never been charged with any type of abuse or neglect or, you know, and yet this happened to you. And if it happened to you, it's obviously happening to other people. Do me a favor, if you will. Shergan, I know we have some of it behind you and we're going to be putting it up on the screen as well, but share again where everyone can find you and how they can help and support and maybe become advocates and all of that.
Yeah, the best way and probably the easiest way is if people just go to letourchildrengo.org. We have a contact page on there. And if you reach out to that, we'll get an email. If people want to just directly email us, it's letourchildrengo@protonmail.com. So I think the easiest way is probably for people just to go to the contact form on the website, though. And then we also have an umbrella organization that Mark oversees, the Heritage and Freedom Coalition, and that's at h3fc.com. And that has some more of our story there, too.
Thank you. And, I want to make sure you've had a chance to say what you needed to say and things that you want to. Is there anything that we did not cover that you want to make sure you get out there for people to know and understand?
Yes. Elsa, I know we're going to be up against a time constraint here, but just real quick. And you have highlighted this a couple of times. There is more to the story, but not in the way people think. It's exceedingly evil. What is being done across our country under this disguise. And we're going to expose it. We have been on a mission to expose it, but not just expose it, but to also fix it. Okay, because we're out here to bring about the corrective action. Every system within our government system, every agency within our government system has failed us. All of our representation that we went to, I would have thought that with the kind of representation we had in the state, to include our senators, representatives, when we went there with our evidence, all the way up to the highest levels of the Department of Justice, the FBI several times, every state official we could get a hold of, our governor. And yet we were just turned away and ignored, even our petition for redress. We're at the we the people level. Child abuse and neglect is a criminal statute in the state of Kentucky and many other states. And yet they are not proceeding against parents with criminal due process where the presumption of innocence is there. And you get a jury trial and you have public oversight. Basically, you know, we're being denied government of by and for the people. So this is part of a seditious operation. It's gotten so bad to where these people have cemented themselves with immunity. And people can find out more about that at h3fc.com, APB3, or on the All Points Bulletin tab. There is no immunity in the United States of America under federal law. It's U.S. Code Title 42, Chapter 21, Section 1981. It says that all persons under the jurisdiction of the United States shall have the same right in every state to sue and be subject to like pains, punishments, and penalties. And yet what these people have done over these many years since the AFA, around or after it, is they have established these color of law state laws, giving themselves immunity against civil or criminal liability. That is a deprivation of rights under that law that I just mentioned, as well as our 14th Amendment equal protection to laws. And so with all the other things that we're talking about across the United States, this is another element, but a very big element because it strikes at the heart of our country and who we are, our families and our children. So we have a seditious operation happening. And, if a person has not been convicted of a crime, they haven't done anything wrong. All right. What they have been subjected to is a fraudulent operation under a disguised civil proceeding where there is no contract and the American people are being duped and seduced and they're paying for it and buying into a lying narrative. And it's high time that we put aside this lying narrative and join together to show up and demand the corrective action from our people and our system of government that we pay to secure our rights and prevent the destruction of our families and our children. Our children are being re-educated. They're being subjected to various medical abuses and experimentation, drugging, and the effect is very, very destructive. They have taken over $45,000 of my military pension in the name of child support. Any kind of income that I would get from a normal run-of-the-mill job in America will be subject to the automatic theft. They have their fingers inside of our bank account, and they can basically come after our money that we have in the account at will in the name of child support. And they're attempting to make Terry subject to child support as well, even though she was a stay-at-home mother. She had not been working since we've been married. And so this is what's happening, not just to us, but of many other families. And it's time for us, we the people, when we have nowhere else to go, to join together. And so that's part of our mission, is that you can just share that with someone, share someone watching this, share this link to someone you know, and join them with us, because this is our mission to go about local action to national impact. That if we can build these local chapters and local action networks and get people informed as to the truth of what's going on, we can bring about the corrective action and stop the damage unfolding under this disguised operation in our country right now. So I'm going to turn it back over to you, and thank you so much for hosting us. We're really honored to be with you today.
It is so awe-inspiring to watch your tenacity and your strength and your perseverance through all of this, and your mama and papa bear instincts to keep fighting for your kids and for other people's kids as well. And that is huge and very, very necessary in this world. I thank you both for being on the show. I thank all of you for watching. And, you know, please share this information, share their information, share this episode, all of the things. Let's all do our part to protect the children. We'll see you in the next episode, guys.
Hey, family, if you're looking for the perfect gift for the reader in your life, why not check out one of my books? They're all available on Amazon and most major online book retailers, as well as elsakurt.com.